Shut up and sit down.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Bike lane, don't walk in the bike lane. You're in the bike lane, can you please move? Bike lane, you're in the bike lane. They built a bike lane, it's not for you.
Get this, you and millions of other smart people are listening to the Dialed Podcast with Matt LeGrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. Tip of the day: he who asks is a fool for 5 minutes, but he who does not ask remains a fool forever. Don't make Mr. T pity you.
Bike lane, you're in the bike lane. If you leave the lane, thank you.
No one really knows the intricacies of the law, especially when it relates to bicycles.
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I'm Jake Von Deering. I'm here with Lance Friggin Hepler.
Right here in the room.
What's up, Friggin?
Welcome.
What's up, Friggin? And to Lance's right, big bowl of chocolate candy.
That's right.
Big bowl of chocolate candy. How are you doing
chocolate
today?
Chocolate candy is here and looking for anyone interested.
That was kind of mean, actually. You did this on purpose so that you don't eat this crap.
Yep.
Dude, stop reading my mind.
Okay.
Don't give away all my secrets. To his right, Matt LeGrand.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys look good, but you don't look as good as this hot bowl of chocolate. It's in a heart shape, too.
Nice.
Valentine's Day is over.
And then on the phone with us, coming to us from Seattle today, Mr. Paul Tomei. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm great. Great to be on Dial Podcast again since I saw you last year.
Gotcha. And for those who may have missed that, or I know that you're world famous, but just in case they don't know who Paul Tomei is, Paul, where are you with? Who are you with? What do you do?
I work with Cascade Bicycle Club, which is the statewide bike advocacy events and education group in headquartered in Seattle, but we work statewide, and we're a 501c3 nonprofit, but we also have a sister organization called Washington Bikes, which works in Olympia to pass legislation to improve the safety of bicyclists out on the road.
Fantastic. The Cascade Bicycle Club, that's just a little bicycle club. It's just a couple people in there. What are you guys up to? 20, 30
just
people?
A tiny 10,000.
Oh, my
wow.
gosh.
Wow. 10,000 members. Okay, that's impressive.
You know, we bring a lot of value to our members. You know, membership in Cascade means you get discounts on our big rides like STP, Seattle to Portland. Upcoming in a few weeks, we've got Chili Hilly out on Bainbridge Island on February 26th. So there are a lot of great reasons to become a member of Cascade. I urge all your listeners to go to cascade.org. That's my plug, guys.
Sweet. All right. Dial podcast over, right? All right. Well, this week we are going to jump right into a topic, and it's just, we're going to talk about the whole Washington Bikes thing that he's got going on, the Cascade Bicycle Club that they've got going on, and all the fun things in between. Paul sent us over a few blog posts, and I think, were you the author of said blog post as well? That you sent?
If I'm not the author, I'm the editor. So I write most of the blog posts, but also my colleagues and policy team write a lot of the policy-related blog posts.
Gotcha. All right, well, let's jump into it.
What are you talking about, Willis?
Bro, what are you talking about, man?
What are you talking about?
What the f*** are you talking about?
You don't know what you're talking about.
What you talking about, Paul? What you got to talk about? Start us off. What's the first thing?
Well, on the Washington Bikes side, you referenced some of the stuff we're working on there. And so we are working at Olympia to really address this, what we're calling kind of a spike of traffic violence. We're seeing it in Washington State and nationwide, where sadly, people riding bikes as well as pedestrians walking in the street are being hit at rates we haven't seen in 20 or more years. So it's a real public health crisis, and we're trying to address that legislatively to make it safer for folks to ride out on the streets. There's been something's happened out on the roadways since the pandemic, where we're seeing more speeding, more reckless driving, and that's translating into much more danger for people riding bikes.
Based on the statistics of these numbers that you're telling us, does this transcend all age groups or all motor vehicle drivers? Are we looking at particular segments that are a little bit more at fault or a little bit more egregious here? Is that something you can speak to?
Well, it's no secret that younger drivers are riskier drivers. Mm-hmm. And so there is some correlation with crashes related to younger drivers. And so that relates to one of the bills we're trying to get passed in Olympia, which would require driver's education to a higher age. Right now, if you want to get your license in Washington State, if you want to get it at 16, you have to go through driver's ed. However, if you wait till after the age of 18, you do not have to go through that driver's education training, which is where you learn a lot of the safe practices of riding on the road. And so we want to change that so that, you know, our younger drivers are safer drivers.
That just makes all the sense in the world. And I just can't wrap my head around the idea of that people are able to go out and get a driver's license at 18 years old. That's fine and well that they can get a driver's license, but not to have the driver's education. I mean, sure, they have to sit down. They have to be able to, like, study and pass the test. But if they don't actually have somebody teaching them and actually putting that into practical application, that just – it's just, it's not right. It's not safe.
I've noticed more and more teenagers not wanting to take on that driving responsibility at 16, which I find very interesting. Like, I think when we grew up, it was like, you turn 16 and try to get that license as soon as possible.
The day I turned 16, yeah. I was at the DMV to get my driver's license. Yeah.
And I think that
me too. And I got a ticket like 3 weeks later.
Yeah. I think the new thing is like a little bit of avoidance of that responsibility, which I think is very interesting. If you look at the statistics, like 16-year-olds are less likely to, you know, be working. They're less likely to be driving. They're less likely to be, you know, doing more things on their own, which is interesting. I mean, I find myself being a hover parent currently, so I'm probably contributing to the problem. But, you know, I actually thought when you mentioned some of the stuff that it would have been older drivers that would have been more apt to call some of these problems. But so it's kind of good to hear that it is youth.
Well, it seems like the older drivers are the ones that are less patient, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, it's like got that get off my lawn mentality, like get off my road,
the people that honk and yell at us.
Yeah, or tell you number one. But
well, I have had younger people do it, but mostly it's older people.
Yeah, but it does feel like that is a little bit more of an issue. There's more people out there that don't want us out there. And then there's more people who are just naive to what the rules of the road are. I did a little piece, gosh, it was like back in like November, December, where I posted for 10 days straight, like rules of the road for cyclists and for drivers. And it was amazing how many people had no idea. And they're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that that was the law. Thank you so much for posting that. And now I know. And the ignorance level is just absurd. It really is. And people drive completely dangerously. They don't know that cyclists are allowed to be out there on the road. They don't know how to handle a bicycle. And I actually had one of our juniors, she's in the process of getting her driver's license right now. And she was driving. She's a cyclist, obviously. And she was with her driving instructor. She was out doing a session. There was somebody riding a bike on the side of the road. And she gave them almost the entire lane when she passed them, and it was completely safe. There was no cars coming the other direction. There was no double yellow line. It was completely appropriate for her to go all the way around her. Her driving instructor chastised her for going too far over to give the cyclist too much space.
No.
I was like, what the?
No.
Like,
we need to get that like driving instructor's name, because they're just going to reiterate that to a whole bunch of young drivers.
So that just goes to show you, though, that the ignorance when it comes to people not understanding how to interact with bicycles when on the road, and even some cyclists how to interact with traffic. Oh, there's a lot of people that need a lot of help.
Yeah.
Sorry for the little rant there.
No, that's okay. I mean, and so making drivers aware of, you know, just how vulnerable you are as a bicyclist out there on the road is something we want to pass along. You know, obviously, we all ride bikes. And so when we're driving, you know, people who ride bikes are much safer when passing or riding around people on bikes. Just to get back on the legislative track a bit, there's a few other bills I would mention that your listeners might be interested in. One is, we're calling it hashtag wrong on red. You could check that out on Twitter. But essentially, we are looking to restrict where people can take right turns on red, especially around schools, in downtown busy urban centers where you have a lot of foot traffic and bicycles crossing and crosswalks. Crosswalks should be safe places, but unfortunately, they're one of the most dangerous places to be. More than 20% of people who are hit by cars while walking or bicycling are hit in a crosswalk. And that's tremendous
astounding count. So
this would ban right on red everywhere, but it would give cities the discretion to ban right on red in places where it simply doesn't make sense because there are a lot of either children or people walking or riding bikes. Regarding we calling it bad driver retesting, due to a quirk, this is in the law. This is another bill we are supporting, HB 1319. There's a technical glitch in the way that crash data is reported to the Department of Licensing. So right now, if you are a driver and you hit somebody bicycling or walking, that information might not get passed along to the Department of Licensing. If it was a serious injury or a fatal injury, obviously it would. There are some charges. But if it's just sort of a minor, and I hate to even use that word, minor crash where there wasn't a serious fatality or a life-altering injury, and there were no criminal charges, you might not be required to get retesting. So that's something legislatively we want to address, where people driving who hit somebody should be required to get retested before they can get their license back.
Makes all the sense in the world, yeah.
Right? It seems like that should be all the sense in the world. But in any case, we think that that's just a technical glitch in the law, which we can get fixed. We're also working on bills that would, frankly, make our communities more bikeable and walkable, trying to make sure that the legislature, which last year, hallelujah to the Washington State Legislature, passed a historic investment in bicycling and walking, $1.3 billion spread out over more than a decade to build more safe infrastructure.
Wow.
So Washington State will see a lot of infrastructure improvements in coming years. It's just can't build it fast enough.
Can you elaborate on that? I mean, what should we be looking for in terms of like what they're going to do?
Well, there are grant making programs. So it was called the Move Ahead Washington Transportation Package, and it included a lot of stuff, money for infrastructure, as well as some new requirements. For instance, a lot of rural towns have state highways passing through them, mm-hmm. And so they're not owned by the city, and so they can't do infrastructure improvements necessarily. It's a more of a bureaucratic process where you got to work with the state, and so there's just some red tape involved there. This Move Ahead package included wording that for projects over $500,000. Say the state wanted to improve a corridor through Leavenworth, Washington, for instance, which is where the state highway passing right through town. I used to live there. If they want to do $500,000 or more of work, they have to run it through sort of what's called a safe streets program, where they have to look at adding either sidewalks, bike lanes, other improvements, safer crosswalks. So that becomes a mandate on all projects over $500,000. So we think that will bear fruit and make a lot of these state highways safer in future years. Mm-hmm. There was also a major education component to it. So right now, Cascade Bicycle Club works with the city of Seattle on a program called Let's Go, where we work with the schools, school system, to train their gym teachers to give a bicycle education curriculum for elementary kids all the way into middle school and onward into high school through our Major Taylor program. Move Ahead Washington included over $200 million to expand those programs statewide in future years. So we're really in the early stages of just sort of building that out, figuring out how we're going to do this. It's going to require the purchase of massive bike fleets for school districts all across the state, but it is tailored to the first priority communities will be school districts that are in traditionally underserved areas, populations which maybe don't that have less economic activity, so that it will be targeted to the communities of need first. But by the full build out, something like 90% of kids going through school systems in the state will get bike education. And we know that kids who learn how to ride bikes often carry that through their entire lives and become adults who ride bikes. And so we feel that that will bear fruit, not only in terms of getting more people in the future to ride for transportation, you know, as we look to kind of mitigate our climate impacts, but also people who ride bikes become safer drivers.
Absolutely. That was going to be my exclamation point, and you nailed it right there. We do a lot of work with a lot of our juniors kids, and you know, first and foremost is protecting the safety of these kids to make sure that when they are out there and they're riding on the road, they're riding safely. And it's amazing to watch them have those aha moments like, oh, this is how traffic works. And oh, this is what I need to think of when I'm on my bike, but also when I'm in the car. So they drive safer. They're more aware of things. And it's just a fantastic process to get kids to be better little human beings out there on the road.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
Thank you for that. Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anybody who wants to learn more about Washington Bikes and our legislative agenda can go to wabikes.org.
Gotcha. There are a few other policies here that I'm seeing in this article that you guys put out that you guys are looking to do, and you've already touched on some of them, you know, the ride on red thing. Lowering the state's legal...
Wrong on red, Jake.
What I said, right on red?
Hashtag wrong on red.
Oh, is it outlawing? Okay. Outlawing right on red. Gotcha. Yeah. Anyway.
Only in school districts. I think that's important because when you hear it right away, you're just like, oh, no, people should be able to turn right on red.
Yeah.
But when you start to think about, like, at schools?
Close to schools, or busy, yeah.
I mean, right. I think if you want to sell this, you're just like, you're going to do this at schools? Like, come on, this is an easy thing to pass.
Yeah.
So
when you talk about the kids.
That's the distinction. It's not a ban on all turns on red.
It's just where it makes common sense. Yeah.
Yep.
So, but you guys are also working to help lower the legal blood alcohol limit to 0.05%.
According to that legislation, a couple weeks back, there was a big press conference with the governor and a lot of the legislators on the transportation committees, and the lowering the blood alcohol to 0.05 was one of the pieces of legislation where we're not driving on that one, but we fully support it.
Yeah.
Utah in either 2019 or 2020 lowered from 0.08 to 0.05, and they noticed an immediate drop in the number of folks who were drinking and driving. And it's important to note that this people say, well, how would you enforce that? You know, is this going to be just more police out on the streets forcing more traffic stops? And not really. I mean, what they showed, the data showed in Utah, that just the awareness of that law existing caused more people to either, you know, a designated driver or use rideshare or Uber or Lyft. So it's really aimed at behavioral change and awareness, not necessarily more enforcement.
Yeah, that 0.08 just feels like, I think I can get away with this. I think I feel good. And, you know, like you're like, I think I'm walking like the 0.05, you're like, oh, crap. Yeah. I had one beer like 2 hours ago. Is that going to still be in my system? That changes the paradigm of this whole thing. It changes the mental shift, like you mentioned. And I think that that's a good thing just to make people be safer. And it's not just for cars v. bikes. This is cars v. everything, everybody. And I think that people just need to be more responsible. You already talked about the getting the driver's education. That's fantastic. And then there's one last thing here that I'm kind of curious on this, and I'm hoping that maybe you can better elaborate. And I know that this is something that you guys are helping maybe advocate for, or I don't know if you guys are writing this in there, but it's raising fees for the deadliest vehicles. How do you define that?
And this is something that's going on nationwide. One of the data points in why we are seeing more fatalities is that modern vehicles are heavier, larger. You look at the front end of a lot of pickup trucks these days versus 20 years ago, you see how they're so much higher off the road. And so, you know, physics being what they are, the amount of trauma that someone who's hit by a large front end is so much more harmful versus in the old days, you would, you know, people might get flipped up onto the hood of a car rather than, you know, it's graphic, but rather than smashed into and run over, which is not a situation you want to be in. And so I have to check in with our policy director on the status of that legislation. But essentially, we would like to see an educational component there and awareness so that if you are about to buy a vehicle that is a large pickup truck or something with a large front end,
like that a Sprinter van,
you'd be given some information just about the data that, you know, these vehicles can be more dangerous to people walk, people biking.
Yeah. I mean, it does come back though to that the person behind the wheel, it's like how they actually utilize said vehicle versus like the vehicle. It's not like the vehicle is going to go seek out and to hit cyclists and run them over, hit people in crosswalks and splat them.
My Tesla might.
It might.
Self-driving. Self-driving.
But I don't know.
Evil self-driving.
That one, I can see the point there. That might be a little bit more difficult for a lot of people to digest. I mean, sure. Yeah, just to say, like, if you should hit somebody with this car, it's going to be much more dramatic. Like, I probably wouldn't be here with you guys right now if, when Sean and I got hit by that car 4.5 years ago, if it wasn't a little Audi TT, if it was a big flat front end pickup truck, you know, chances are it probably would have ended quite differently. So
still. Yeah. And we don't want to demonize, you know, drivers of these vehicles here. It's just physics being what they are. You know, the larger the object, the more mass.
But it does say here, like, raise fees for the deadliest vehicles. I personally drive a Sprinter van. So does Lance.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to pay more fees on top of an already expensive vehicle, just because somebody thinks that I'm going to, you know, go out and kill somebody. But and what does that fee accomplish? It's like, I'm still going to drive it. You're going to charge me. Where's that fee going? I don't know. I kind of question that one just a little bit, but I see the point.
Yeah, and that was in our, when we were looking last year, we held a big news conference really to call attention to this epidemic, this public health crisis we're calling of traffic violence. And that's language that bike advocacy groups are using across the country these days, traffic violence. We were looking at that. I don't know if that was put into legislation for this session, however. So it's something we're looking at for future years,
sure.
But I can get back with an update on that particular, if that has been filed legislatively.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. What else? Anything else that you want to touch on with all of these, what I would consider pretty cool things?
Yeah. Well, I'd love to talk about, we've been talking about this serious stuff and, you know, obviously we want, your audience and everybody who rides bikes to become allies in this effort to make our streets safer. But, you know, on the Cascade Bicycle Club side, it's ride season is about to begin. We just had our kind of our kickoff event in Seattle, which is the annual Seattle Bike Swap, which is a great time to come out and, you know, buy used bikes and help raise money for Cascade's Major Tail project. And we had an e-bike demo this year for the first time ever. So folks who are interested in buying an electric bike to commute to work instead of drive could test a bunch of electric bikes. So
I got a couple questions on this. The first thing is about the swap that you guys ran. We've been talking about wanting to do something like this, and it would probably be like 1/1000th of the size of what it looks like you guys did. How did you guys pull this off? Where was it at? And how many people showed up to this thing? It looks like it was a massive event.
Yeah, so we hold it down in the Seattle Center, which is where the Space Needle is, and a lot of public grounds there. So there's an exhibition hall that we held the event in. We had about 1,000 folks in there, over 70 vendors. I would say next year, come bring the dial booth up to Seattle Bike Hall.
That'd be cool.
That'd be rad.
Sell out fancy used road bikes and kits there.
Sure.
That's kind of a nice social event, but Chili Hilly coming up on February 26th out on beautiful Bainbridge Island, 33 miles. And true to its name, it isn't always chilly, but it certainly can be, but it's definitely 100% hilly. Bainbridge Island's a gorgeous spot. Mm-hmm. So that's the kickoff ride for our season. And we've got a bunch of exciting new events coming up this year as well. I mean, obviously, STP is back for the second straight year, the 40th Seattle to Portland Bicycle Classic. And that's in July. That's a great event. I know you guys have ridden that. You can do it in 1 or 2 days, 206 miles. For the folks, the same folks who do it in 2 days, we have big camping areas and places to stay at the halfway point, as well as food. And they're fully supported with snack, hydration, water, mechanical aid, et cetera. The other big ride we're bringing back, which due to the pandemic was canceled for multiple years, is our SVP, the ride from Seattle to Vancouver and Party. That's a gorgeous ride going northward up into the other Vancouver. Maybe your listeners have heard of it up in BC. And so that's a real exciting one in August. Ride for Major Taylor is end of April, April 23. That's a fundraiser for our Major Taylor project, which is a program that works with high schools in Tacoma, in South Seattle, in school districts that are underserved with large populations of students of color, to teach bike skills, as well as run a build-a-bike program so students that participate can build bikes. In any case, Ride for Major Taylor is a fundraiser for that program. And then we have our Tour Lights tours, which are frankly some of my favorite rides. My wife and I try to do them. We hold them in Lake Chelan, Port Townsend. This year, for the first time, we're going to do a three-day gravel tour out in the Metau Valley. If any of your listeners are cross-country skiers, Metau Valley out in Winthrop and Mazama area of Washington is renowned as being one of the best places for cross-country skiing in North America, with over 200 kilometers of groomed trails. They also have lots of community bike trails and gravel roads. So we're going to be holding a three-day gravel tour light out there in June. I'm definitely signing up for that one.
That sounds great. It's going to be a blast.
What does it cost to do that?
Let me see. You're going to put me on the spot with the
ballpark idea too.
$150 and with that, we keep these tour lights pretty affordable. Yeah, I mean, you have to book your own accommodations or camp. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't include your lodging, obviously, but that gives different people the opportunity. If you want to stay in a hotel or an Airbnb, you can. If you want to camp, you can certainly do that as well. All our tour lights have that. The Lake Chelan one in April is a great one as well. That's wine country out there, Washington wine country. Mm-hmm. And the other one I'll mention is our Walla Walla tour light. Talk about another great wine region. So these tour lights, they have routes of between 40 and 60, 70 miles. They're all slightly different based on the location, but they're hub and spoke tours. So you start, you stay in a town, book your lodging, your camp in a central spot. And then there's a start location with snacks and water, et cetera. And then three different loops each day. So you're riding off in different parts of town, up into the mountains, kind of different clover leaf.
Oh, that's
great. Yeah, they're really fun. And they're great for couples where maybe one partner is stronger than the other, because we'll often have a shorter and a longer loop, for instance. Mm-hmm. And they're great social events as well. At the end of the day's rides, they often stop at a winery or a microbrewery, so you can refresh afterward and meet a lot of new folks. They're kind of one of the best-kept secrets of Cascade Bicycle Club in terms of their small 200-ish people participate in these tour lights, but they're a real blast and a great way to see a community like Walla Walla or Chelan, Washington, or Port Townsend out on the coast. We also have another tour light this year out in the Grays Harbor area, Long Beach area. So Those are really fun, and people who signed up to do three of those, we're kind of branding those as our Ride Around Washington series. You will get a free Ride Around Washington jersey as for participating in three of our tour lines.
Gotcha. Now, obviously, this is good for tourism for these particular areas that you're going to. Do you guys have to do a lot with the municipalities in these different areas to set these up? Is it a pretty intensive thing, or is it more you just kind of show up and you go ride all these routes and tell people, like, hey, this is kind of what the deal is?
I wish it were that easy. Yeah, no, our events team works really hard. I mean, working with the local communities to, you know, for instance, put up signage. The requirements for marking routes, for instance, are different in every location. And we talk to the local lodging partners to make them aware that we'll be bringing a bunch of folks into town. We talk to locals about, you know, mapping the best routes in places where, like, for instance, in the Metau Valley for the gravel tour. That's a place where it's a new tour, so we don't have as much on the ground knowledge of the roads and community bike trails there. So yes, we work very closely with the localities, and if there are locations in Washington that are interested in having a tour light, I would urge them to reach out to us.
You know, I'm looking on your website at these different tours. They look fantastic. Yeah. And they're cheap. I mean, $200 for a non-member, or $180 if you're a member of the Cascade Bicycle Organization. I mean, that's for 3 days, and that just, this seems, I'm intrigued.
Looks like a good deal.
Lance is getting in his van after we're done here.
Yeah.
Come on up. We'd love to have you, Lance. If any of you guys want to do any of our tour lights, send me an email afterward and we'll chat. But yeah, we really strive to keep them affordable. And that's one of the benefits of membership as well, is you get discounts on all these events. But I should say one of the reasons we can keep them as affordable is we have a large core of dedicated volunteers who help us put on all these events, run the food stops, the water stops, et cetera. Our volunteers are true heroes. And, you know, and so if anybody's interested in volunteering for Cascade, look us up. The other thing is, you can feel good about participating and spending your $150 or $200 on any of these events, because all of the proceeds after expenses go to support our programming. So they're essentially fundraising events that go to support our advocacy and our education work. Cascade's kind of known for Seattle to Portland and putting on these other cool rides, and we love that, those recreational events. But really, there are revenue drivers for us to do all of the work that, you know, doesn't make any money, like fighting for safer laws and regulations in Olympia and in Seattle and across the state, as well as educating young people. So you can feel good about signing up and joining one of our rides.
Fantastic. Just one more thing about these what do you call them? The tour lights?
Tour light.
Are they capped? Yeah, do you have a total number of people that are allowed to do these? Will they sell out if they are capped?
Some of them are capped, but that's a good question. I should clarify that with my event director. But typically, they are kept around 200 to 250, mm-hmm. Because we do want to keep it small.
Gotcha.
Obviously, putting on an event for thousands of people takes a lot more effort than putting on an event for a couple hundred people.
Gotcha.
But if you're interested in the gravel tour, I would urge you to look into your camping spot or your booking a hotel there out in Winthrop real soon, because I think that one's going to be a favorite due to the excitement around gravel riding.
Sure.
And the fact that's a new, and it's such a gorgeous spot.
That's the beauty of a Sprinter van. I just need a wide spot in the road. I don't need a camping spot
or a hotel. There you go. Just jump in the river to take it.
That's right.
Yeah. Don't need no stinking shower.
They're overrated after a couple of days.
Nice. Well, this all sounds fun. I ask that question just because I know that I procrastinate and I get pulled in a million different ways. And I sometimes want to go do these things and then I find out, oh, it's sold out, and well, womp, womp, womp.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, you got a friend here at Cascade, Jake. So, I'll see what I get.
Oh, so I can say I know somebody. Awesome. Yeah, we would. It would be awesome if Cascade was more active down here in the Vancouver area. I think that we could really take advantage of that. And the cycling community here is fantastic. I'm sure they would eat that up. Maybe you guys need a chapter down here in Vancouver.
You know, we do. But we would love to work with you guys. We try to work with bike clubs and bike advocacy, smaller bike advocacy groups that are, across the state and Spokane and across the, across Washington. So let's follow up on that. Maybe there's a way that we could partner with you guys, on any of our programming or, look at, for instance, our pre-group rides program is, any given day of the week, you can find rides led by Cascade volunteers in different parts of Washington. And so we'd love to get, a Cascade pre-group ride going down the Vancouver area. I would be stoked to follow up with you on figuring out how we could work with Dialed a little bit more.
Good. So how are things going at Cascade now that the pandemic is mostly in the rearview mirror and people seem to be getting back on track? And I see more events down here and I see more people coming out of the woodworks. And it feels like we're kind of getting back to normal for the most part. How are things going up there for you guys? Are you guys seeing increased memberships or more rides?
The pandemic was hard for every nonprofit and frankly for everybody in general. As I wrote in my year-end blog post for 2022, it's nice to finish a long ride strong, and that's certainly what we did. We had furloughs of a lot of staff during the pandemic, but we've hired most of those folks back. So we're getting back up to where we were pre-pandemic in terms of our numbers of staff on board. We also have a lot of new programs that really stemmed out of that need, that crisis that the pandemic brought about, which one of them was food insecurity. We saw food banks have a spike in demand during the pandemic, right at the time when they were losing all their volunteers, who were often older folks who, for COVID reasons, couldn't come work in the food bank. As well as people getting laid off from work and suddenly having to rely on food banks. So there was this spike in food insecurity, and a couple staff members started out just on their own, a program working with one food bank, and that grew into two. And now it's been adopted as a Cascade program called Pedaling Relief Project, where we partner with five food banks in Seattle to deliver multiple days a week, rescue from grocery stores and bring back to food banks, as well as deliver to homes food to folks who can't make it into the food bank for whatever reason. So there's multiple benefits there in terms of, as a person, as a bicyclist, it's a great way to get out and do a ride and feel really good about it and get to explore your neighborhood while helping out some folks in need. It also is taking cars off the road. In the past, some of these deliveries would have been done by van or motor vehicle. So now we're using cargo bikes and bikes pulling trailers to do these deliveries. And it's been an amazing program with, I believe the figure is over 450,000 pounds of food rescued and delivered. So yeah, 500,000 pounds of food delivered to the community, helping out these food banks and feeling good about it in the process. So that's a relatively new program for Cascade, but it's more of the type of thing we're trying to do, really make people aware of how bikes can be a solution, not just a great form of recreation, fun, exercise, but also real solutions to a lot of the problems we face in our communities and society in general.
Gotcha. Now, did you guys see an uptick in membership from all of the people that came into the cycling world that weren't, say, in said cycling world prior to the pandemic? Did you guys see an uptick there?
We have now. We did lose a little membership during the pandemic just because I think people were a little tighter with their budgets, but we're back up to where we were pre-pandemic. And so we're really stoked about that. It's an interesting dynamic. One of the things, as we see the population aging, young people are just not as inclined as older generations to join clubs. And that's something that is happening across the nonprofit world. So we're really looking at ways to really engage more with millennials and Gen Zers, and projects like, and those younger generations are more apt to support causes, mm-hmm. say, you know, climate action, or, you know, fighting homelessness or food insecurity. And so we're really trying to match our programming to some of the desires of the younger generations to keep them riding bikes and show them how bikes can be relevant and how Cascade can be the portal.
That's interesting. Are you seeing hesitation from these kids too, just because the day and the age that they live in, with more vehicles out on the road and more of these fatalities that we're talking about, or these carvy bike issues? And there's a huge trend going away from people riding on the road, you know, just because of the right. you know, gravel scene blowing up, and people, the mountain biking is as strong as it's ever been. But I feel like the road scene isn't quite as strong, because a lot of people are just hesitant. So do you see these younger generations are like, yeah, no thanks, I'm gonna miss that, I'm gonna go do other things instead?
I would say that yeah, I would agree with you when it comes to road riding,
yeah,
recreational road ride. But we are seeing a massive uptick in bike commuters, for instance.
That's and fantastic. So, yeah,
so the bicycling community is large and varied. You know, you've got your folks like myself and you guys who, you know, wear bike kits and go out and do long road rides. But, you know, there are also all those people who want to ride for transportation just mm-hmm. as a way to commute or go do their grocery shopping. And so we are kind of a bridge between those communities. And so we're seeing a huge uptick. I mean, yes, you know about the bike boom, and especially the e-bike boom that took place during the pandemic, mm-hmm. where a lot of those folks were just looking for a healthy outdoor recreational activity. So recreational bicycling boomed. But we're seeing more people bike commuting on the streets of Seattle than ever before. We know that that number would even be higher if there was more safe infrastructure. And so it's this push and pull. We want, you know, more folks riding bikes become allies in us pushing policymakers to build the safer infrastructure.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there is hesitancy of some folks to get out and ride on the road because they don't feel safe around cars. So it's a really interesting time in bicycling in general. But I would say there are more folks riding bikes in general than ever before. Road riding obviously is in this transitional phase where, you know, everybody's going to gravel and mountain biking because it's, you don't have to worry about cars. Yeah, we're monitoring all these changes, but we love anybody who gets on a bike, is a hero in our eyes. And so,
yeah, I will always, forever and a day, love road riding. It's, just in my DNA to love that. And I really, really hope that the stuff that you guys are working on gets like a firm grip and traction with legislation, legislators, and the communities of people will, like, you know, hopefully respond to that in a good non-poor way. I have a feeling though that there's going to be feedback or apprehension or frustration from people that aren't cyclists to see these things happening, and, you know, like, you're going to spend money on what, and you're going to take away my driving abilities, and you're going to tell me how to drive, and, you know, get off my lawn. You know, they're going to take that, and I just don't want that to happen.
What can people do that? Like, are there action items that those of us that do support some of these legal changes that are bike proponents, like, what are the action items that we can do? Should we be reaching out to our representatives, or is there like a...
You nailed it. We put out action alerts, or mm-hmm. Washington Bikes, our legislative sister to Cascade Bicycle Club, does action alerts. So you can go to wabikes.org. And reach out there, and you can get. We'll put out through the legislative session, you know, email blasts saying, send your legislator, this bill is coming up for a hearing vote. Email your legislator, and we'll even provide some, you know, draft language there for you to start with. So that's one thing that your listeners and you guys can do. And we know that makes a difference. We had a huge outpouring of pro comments submitted when the wrong on hashtag wrong on red bill came up, and we know that that made a difference. So those bills will be coming up for floor vote. You know, it's a long process. Things work; they go into committees, and then there's House and Senate versions, and then they eventually go to the floors of each of those chambers. And so there are many places where people can submit, notes to their legislators saying, please vote for this bill.
Gotcha. So on the website, I see wabikes.org, and at the bottom, there's a stay informed little bit. You know, it's one of the kind of bottom menu items, and sign up for action alerts. I think that's what I want to do.
There you go. Thank you for doing my job for it.
And maybe sign up for the newsletter as well. So this is awesome.
If you really are somebody who wants to just stay informed about what's going on in Washington State in general, whether it's event news, our advocacy work, you can sign up for our newsletter called Breaking News on the Cascade.org website. And that comes out once a month in the winter. And then as we get into the spring and summer seasons when we're doing a lot more, we'll send those newsletters twice a month. But they're a great way to just get a quick hit on all the blog posts that I'm writing and all the events upcoming and good news you can use.
Perfect.
Gotcha. One other quick question for me, and then I'll let the guys see if they've got anything for you. But you might know the answer to this better, and it's something that we discuss quite often. Where I live, it's just a smaller town. Is it even considered a city? It's a city,
yeah,
right?
It's a city, which is interesting. And we have a state highway that runs through our city. So, yeah. I mean, some of the stuff that you were mentioning about some of the money that's earmarked for transportation issues applies directly to our town.
Yep.
Maybe not Lance, but
I'm in Vancouver.
It's a desirable place to live. It's a really nice town. Or city. And it feels like over the last 3 or 4 years, there's nothing sacred here. So they're just building the heck out of it. And it seems like we've had thousands of homes plunked all over the place, and, you know, clear cutting, put in a bunch of homes. I feel like, and it's not an I feel like, it's almost a certainty because it really doesn't happen very often. Like, we're bringing in tons of new residents, which means tons of new cars. And then we've got, you know, people that are still riding bikes here, and it doesn't feel like they've done a thing for infrastructure. I can think of maybe one bike lane that they put in one stretch, but on the whole, nothing else has changed yet. We've had, you know, developers coming in and making, you know, fistfuls of money. And I'm sure that the city's excited about that too, because it's more income and, you know, taxes and things of that nature. But I feel like, well, the schools aside, I mean, that's a whole nother problem. But in terms of like infrastructure to make roads safer to drive on and to ride bikes on, not much really happened, despite the fact that a bunch of new people are in the system here, working, living within the city. What would be your recommendation, Paul, as to how to make a stink about this? Is it just, do you go talk to your city planners? Do you take it a little bit higher up the food chain and maybe go to your state legislatures? How does someone, you know, bring that up and say, hey, listen, we're a segment of the population here, and we're a pretty sizable segment, and we've got kids out there riding, it's just not safe. Who do we talk to about this?
Yeah, your legislators and your mayors, your city councilors, town councilors, et cetera. But legislatively, there are a couple bills that would sort of look at that. SB 5093 and SB 5203 are two bills that would reform how cities and counties plan for housing and transportation. So you mentioned about how all these houses are being built, but not necessarily infrastructure to make them bikeable. So these bills would really look at how communities are planned statewide so that transportation infrastructure is adequate to make these communities bikeable and walkable, because that's certainly something we not only want for safety, but also as we look to solve the climate crisis, transportation, essentially driving cars, is the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions in Washington State as well as nationally. So we want to make our communities more walkable and bikeable for many reasons, just for health and livability and for the safety of our children. There is legislation right this year looking at that issue.
That's good. Okay, well, I think I need to find out who that person is and start writing some strongly worded letters.
One of your city council members lives like right there.
Really?
Yep. No, we can talk after the podcast.
behind Jake's house.
Yeah, it's like one street over. So
okay, cool.
You know people.
Well, I know people who know people. I don't know there if I know go. Who said person is, but that's all good.
You know people who know people.
You guys, any more questions for Paul?
No, this is awesome.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah.
This is really good for us to know because I feel like a lot of times we're just kind of going with the flow, and it's nice to be like, here's some action items and see you guys kind of lead the way. And it's an inspiration for a smaller club like ours, but also, you know, just we're all in this together, right? Like we have very similar goals. So
yep,
it's good to see.
So we'll happily jump on those coattails.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to chat with all you guys, and let's continue the conversation because I'd love to figure out how we could partner on initiatives to make, you know, Vancouver and your community safer as well as get you out on some of our rides.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever get down to this neck of the woods? Or are you pretty much just
my brother? In Portland, so over the river. I get over the river quite a bit. That's where my three nieces and nephews are. So
great.
I'm nice. Down there.
We've got a time change coming up here in just over 3 weeks. And once that happens, we've got rides that will be on the schedule pretty much
weekly,
like Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we'll have scheduled rides. So if you're ever in town and you want to jump on a road or a gravel or even a mountain bike ride, you're more than welcome to jump in with us. It's a lot of fun.
I would love that. I'll get our executive director, Lee Lambert, to join, and we'll come down a ride.
That'd be great. There you go. Cool. All right. I think that's about that. Paul, and you're good to stick around with us for the rest of the bit here?
I'd be happy to listen in and offer any non-wisdom.
we don't know what we're talking about either. Who are you kidding?
All right, let's put a pin in that and call that done, and let's move on to this guy.
Champ Bailey, top five.
Champ in the here. Top five discussion. I'm all about
Yo, Champ, what's up, dude?
Champ is here. I'm in the house. There has been some interesting racing that has happened. This is all early season road bike racing that has happened now that cyclocross season is pretty much over.
Did you guys talk about World Championship cyclocross?
We did.
At some point?
Yep. Yeah, I think you missed it. You were in Hawaii, lounging in Hawaii, which was
sounds familiar. Okay,
but
newsflash, Tade won everything.
Okay, yeah, I know, right?
That's okay. About segment it. Over.
So, Pogacar has started out just phenomenally,
which he has in the past.
He has done that in the past. So the first race, it was a 1 day race that he did in Spain, and there was a big gravel section in it actually, but with like 44 Ks to go, he just broke off the front and dropped the field by 2 minutes himself.
Whoa. Wow.
So he did flat with like 8 Ks to go, but he already had a 2 minute lead. And so a 30 second bike change was not that big a deal. And he swapped bikes and he ended up winning that 1 day stage race.
I wonder if he's more motivated after the tour, like if he's more motivated than ever.
Because he lost.
Yep.
Because he did not win last year.
I mean, I'm just thinking
he wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think to me that's like, oh, yeah, he's going to be more motivated this year than ever. Like, he's going to train his wheels off.
Pretty amazing. So then there's also another, there's several stage races happening at the moment. The Tour of Oman.
Okay.
The Vuelta a Andalucía, which is nailed in it. Spain. Pronunciation.
Yep.
And then the Volta al Algarve.
Vuelta.
Which is in Portugal. So there's like three like stage races going on at the same time. Pogacar is at the one in Spain.
He's somehow doing multiple stage races at the same time. He just flies back and forth.
It goes into account because it means Team UAE is split between three different
races.
Yep.
And he's at the one in Spain.
And so the first stage, pretty flat stage, but it had a big climbing section at the end. Okay. And with 12K to go, with like 15K to go, he had three teammates that went to the front and just drilled it on this climb. They split up the whole field and he still had three teammates ahead of him. Right. And then with 12K to go, he just says, okay, thanks boys. And these aren't like his A.
No, we players. Were talking about this before the podcast. I mean, this is like his second tier.
Second tier guys, and they just blew up the field on this climb. So, and he took off with 12K to go, and he won by a minute by himself. So
we know you think the whole thing is over, like he's got it.
So I don't know how many stages this race is because I can't keep track of
them. Sure. It's probably seven or something.
That was yesterday's stage.
Five or seven. Something. Yeah. I don't know.
So today's stage with, I don't know, 200 meters or something to go.
Okay.
He jumped Enrique Mas and beat him by 4 seconds. So he's won both stages.
He's a funny rider because he can sprint.
Yeah.
Which, or like, I mean, for GC, he can sprint,
I should
say.
He's got some pop, yeah.
He's got some pop.
So Pogacar's raced 3 times in the last week, and he's won all 3 races.
We know how superhuman he is, right? Yeah. We know last year, what was like his biggest thing at the Tour? Like, he just did not have the firepower on his team that Jumbo-Visma has.
Well.
He had like 2 off days, and that was enough.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a great team, but it's not Jumbo-Visma, let's just be honest. But this year, they've reloaded and they've brought on some new names and he's going to be tough to beat. He's going to be really tough to beat.
But again, Jumbo-Visma is freaking solid.
Got to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
That is a good team.
It is a good team and they improved too.
Yeah.
So it should make
the rich got richer.
Fun, it makes a fun summer. Another fun race that happened. There is at the Volta. See, I can't even say it. Volta. Algarve, the one in Portugal. They had a little bit of controversy at the finish because it ended up being a field sprint, and the guy who won and raised his arms,
who thought he won,
didn't actually win. So Magnus Cort actually ended up beating the guy who thought he won, and he kind of...
I wonder if he'll have another good season. Wasn't it last year that he just had an unbelievable season?
Yeah, Magnus Cort had a great season, had a great tour.
Yeah,
he, like, won a stage in the tour and was in yellow, I think, for, like, a day or something.
Yeah, maybe. He just... I mean, he was just always in the mix, always, you know, in some sort of breakaway.
So it was Van Wilder from Quickstep who thought he had won and raised his arm.
I've seen his movie.
Yeah. Van Wilder. And
loser.
He didn't win, and he said it was a stupid move. Van Wilder said afterwards, it was a stupid move.
Whatever, man. People do stupid
Magnus
stuff.
Magnus Cort outbiked through him, basically.
Yeah, through the bike.
So
cool.
That was pretty fun and exciting. Those were the funnest stories out of this last week of bike racing. So
what about? I don't know if we touched on this, but Peter Sagan announcing his retirement.
We haven't talked about that yet. No. Oh.
What do you guys think about that?
Is this
his last season? Or
he's going to do one more
season.
He's going to do
the whole season.
Is he going to do?
He's going to go mountain bike race.
Well, he's a classics rider. Like he's a strong classics rider.
Oh, yeah.
Is he going to do some of the stuff in the summer, some Grand Tours, or is it just going to be classics?
I think so.
Yeah, I believe he's going to.
He'll be at the Grand Tours.
Yeah.
Okay.
He actually sprinted pretty well at some earlier races.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, he's still Sagan.
He's going to be fun to watch this year because he's going to just leave it all out there. You know what I mean? I honestly think that he's going to go out there and he'll try and honestly win some stages. But when he's not trying to win stages, I think that he's going to be a lot of fun to be around and a lot of fun to watch doing his wheelies and his crazy things that he likes to do and interacting with the crowds and the other riders. I think
he's always been fun. I just don't know if he's got that many more wins in him. He just hasn't been.
No, it depends on who's in the race.
Like he can't beat Wout.
No,
can't beat MVP. Can't beat Tade. No. I mean, there's a lot of people he can't beat, but I think he's going to either have a stage or a race in him for this year.
Sure. But good for him. He announced it, you know, at the beginning of the season.
He's probably young.
He'll have a retirement tour all, you know, summer long, and he'll get some love every race he goes to. Hopefully. I mean, good for him.
Hopefully he just doesn't get into any like helmet throws and swings to like leave on a bad note.
I want to see him take out Cavendish. Oh, that'd be so awesome.
That would be
they fun. Don't like each other.
They don't like each other. Do you want Cavendish news?
Sure.
If I have to, yeah.
Okay, so Mark Cavendish went to the Tour of Oman and basically sucked.
Uh-oh.
Okay, that's a little harsh. His sprint train on the first stage was a sprint stage. The rest of them really weren't. But the first stage was a sprint. His lead out train actually showed some pretty good promise. There's some possibility there.
Did they ride him off this week?
That would be the best.
He still finished like 21st. He didn't make it up into the money at all. So, and then the rest of the stages, he was like, like fifth from last because they were climbing stages and it didn't matter to them. So that's as much Cavendish news as it was this week. Although there was a story that came out that said he's crafty enough, he's going to win a stage. So, but
yeah, somebody made a comment like he's the smartest guy in the peloton.
Yeah, it was something like
and
that.
There is a lot to be said. I mean, that guy knows all the riders, he knows all of the tactics, he knows exactly how he needs to ride his race to put himself in the best position with the exception of the race that you just talked about.
Correct.
But he unfortunately still has a chance to break the record.
He's got a chance, and I think we have some sort of podcast bet going on whether or not he will or will not.
And he is going to be racing the Giro d'Italia before the Tour de France, I think, to kind of...
He'll do part of it and drop out.
Exactly. That's my guess.
He'll do the first week, right?
He'll do the first week and see how it goes. So we'll see how that's...
Paul, are you a big guy when it comes to a big roadie guy? You follow the big races, the Grand Tours, the classics?
You know, I don't as much as I used to. I was... I had my dime. But I must say, I root for Sagan. I root for all the old guys out there that are just continuing.
Gotcha.
You know, as a Tom Brady fan who grew up in New England.
Yep.
thank goodness we're done with him.
Now, for you and for anybody else out there listening that has maybe got an interest in road bike racing or has been like, I just haven't watched it in a long time or burned out on it and still got some ill will towards road racing because of the doping era. Now is such a good time to come back and watch the racing. There is like once in a lifetime generational talents that are racing right now, and they're all coming to age the same time. And it's just so much fun to watch these young riders, even mixed in with some of the older riders who are crafty that can still get it done. I mean, there's people doing stuff right now that they shouldn't be doing at their age on bikes. Yeah. And it's a blast to watch. And I really do hope that they're all clean and whatnot. But, you know, I think that we're honestly looking at a time where there's just cyclists and athletes out there who are just once-in-a-lifetime people.
We've got Pidcock and Pogacar and Wout and Vanderpool. Mm-hmm. And I mean, all these young guys that are, and Vingegaard, who won the Tour. Come on. This is a great time to watch bike racing.
Egan Bernal and the Ineos. Yes. Like, Ineos is, for pre-Ineos with Sky, for like a decade now, have been like the most dominant team. And they're like third tier right now. And that just goes to show you how many fantastic riders there are. So if you're considering maybe watching some races, this is the time to do it. Get back into it, get to know the players, and watch a few races, and you'll be back hook, line, and sinker.
Agreed.
Love it.
Other than that, Champ is out.
Champ is out?
Champ is out.
So is Matt LeGrand.
Matt LeGrand stepped out because he has a tiny bladder. And so, so if there was triathlon news, we're skipping it.
Triathlon news. Here's your triathlon news. Triathlon season was canceled. Okay, 2023. They'll be back. I think they said, 2026 or 2027? Something like that.
Yeah, with different races for Kona.
Oh, wait. Here he comes. Hey, Matt, is there any triathlon or running news that you want? Nope.
No.
Triathlon's weird. Like this. Right now, there's just not triathlon stuff going on. Yeah, so
we told everybody about the season being canceled. There's no triathlon this year. So
it all got canceled. But I do think, Evan, there's actually going to be a ton of people at the Oceanside race.
Oceanside.
I think like the Jan Frodeno.
70.3.
It's a 70.3, so it's a half Ironman distance. But Jan Frodeno is the former, we'll call him what it is. I mean, he's like the older world champion that was like the best for a long time. It's his first race back in, I think, 2 years. He'll be there. He'll be going up against Evan Price. He has no chance. And by that, I mean, Jan Frodeno has no chance against Evan.
Okay, you're right.
But pretty much, there's going to be a lot of people at that race. It'll be
Sam Long will be there.
Sam Long will be there. Yeah. Yep. It'll be a good one.
I had my little interaction with Sam Long.
You and Sam Long are like besties. I do think you should like send him that. So Lance took like video of Sam Long.
I tagged him on Instagram. Okay, good. So that's as far as I
did. Did he respond or did he?
He didn't. He has, I don't know, he has thousands and thousands of followers.
But still, I mean, for him to get recognized out on the road by some guy.
Random guy following him.
That's kind of cool.
It was pretty funny.
What did you say to him?
I just said, hey, Sam. I said.
You said something like, I'm a big fan.
I said, big unit, you're killing it. That's what I said. Because his nickname is the big unit.
The big unit, yeah.
Because, you know, this was on Mount Lemmon climb. I was driving with my wife, showing her the climb, you know, in the van. And I'm like, hey, I'm pretty sure that's Sam Long right there. Because he's like 6'5". He's like hard to miss. He's a big guy. And then I'm like, yay.
Wasn't it him that was going back and forth with Lionel Sanders on the KM of that?
It did. Yep, exactly. Yeah. That was in 2020.
Did you ask him if he wanted a draft and you'll help him get that segment back?
I should have jumped on the back of the van.
All right. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Whoa, that was louder than I was hoping for. New little bit there. All right, let's backpedal, you guys. Paul, we're going to backpedal. We're going to talk about the last week. You can talk about all the bike racing that you've done or bike rides if you've done any. We'll start with Lance since Lance is sitting right here. Yeah, go.
All right, so I did do a lot of riding. I've been back on the plan trying to get myself fit for training camp so I don't get dropped.
A lot of riding. I don't know. I think that might be more like too much riding, if there's such a thing.
It's possible.
Lance thinks he got picked up by a pro team and he's all of a sudden training 20-something hours a week.
I have been doing 20-hour weeks, but I did have... Last week was a rest week, and I think I only did...
14. 14 or 15.
14 and a half hours.
Rest week, 14.
It was a rest week, 14 and a half hours.
Well done, dude.
Well, okay, so the funnest ride I went on, or the most interesting, was we had a team road ride on Saturday that I joined. I don't know, there was like 10 or 12 of us, and it was only supposed to be like 50 or 60 miles. It was like 60 miles. No, I rode from home. That's why it was
the
longer.
Ride that we had scheduled was 48. No, you were going to ride to and from.
Rode to and from. So it was going to be like 68 for me. But it was just on the road through the Washougal Hills. And midway through the ride, my free hub quit on me. It fell apart, actually.
This does not sound good.
So I'm like on this, climb and I hear this weird grinding noise. Oh, man. And all of a sudden my rear wheel is rubbing against the brake every time I take a pedal stroke.
Yeah. So what happened was this free hub became loose and it needed to be tightened down. But in the process of coming loose, it disengaged, like the pawls inside of the free hub that engaged the gears that got so loose that they became disengaged to where it was just free spinning forward and back.
So you couldn't even pedal.
You couldn't even pedal.
Yeah.
And two of the pawls actually popped off and were inside the body there. So we were trying to do a roadside fix. We take off the rear wheel and I look at it, I'm like, okay, this is what's going on. So I hand tighten it down, but I didn't take the cassette. So basically you've got a bearing that's smashing up against the paw in there and it's going to grind and it's going to create friction. And then ultimately it's just going to loosen up.
Did you have like one paw that was engaging after you tightened it?
There were three that engaged. Three of the five. And two that were out.
Okay. Yep.
That were floating around in there.
Probably could have taken the whole thing apart and fixed it in hindsight, but anyway.
Who's going to do that on the side of the road?
I could have done it.
We were working on it, but they'd already waited for me for like 5 minutes for me to catch back up as I was like push biking my...
Fred Flintstone.
Flintstoning it up to him because I couldn't pedal. And Jake, you know, got it together where it looked like it was spinning right, and it only lasted for like 50 seconds.
It felt like the bearing was going bad. Because it was just giving some resistance, but wouldn't turned out to be the Paul that was
Did you call the wife?
So I coast down to the bottom of the hill, and now I'm on Washougal River Road.
Yeah, we're getting ready to climb up Mount Vernon, which is a mile and a quarter climb. Yeah.
And so everybody, I'm like, just go. Everybody go. I'll figure this out. So I get to the Washougal River Road, and it craps out.
Yeah.
So Washougal River Road, there's like a 5 mile section. There is no cell service. I couldn't text anybody. I couldn't call anybody.
I'm trying to call him. I'm trying to text him. I'm trying to do the find my to find out where he's at. And Nate Scott lives up there, and he ran home, and he's like, said that he would go get you. And
I'm going to go save Lance.
Yeah.
So I had no clue what to do or where to go. So I put my thumb out and I...
Did you really?
Hitchhiked.
You're like, this is not my first time.
What am I gonna do? What else do you do? I'm like, okay, I can't call anybody. I'm just gonna hitchhike. So
Matt, pretend you don't know anybody, and you're driving down Washougal River Road. You're out in the middle of the boonies.
Yep.
And you see a guy standing
in orange tights. I'm gonna rape that guy.
Yeah, all sweaty. And
I'm from Washougal. People from Washougal are gonna write in and be like, no.
I sat there like sitting on my bike to the side with my thumb out.
Yeah.
And it only took 10 minutes. Somebody picked me up. So,
and not only did he pick him up, he drove him all the way home.
He drove me to my house.
Wow. People are nice. People are nice, guys. That's a
30-minute drive.
Washougal people are nice. They're not going to just pick you up and kill you.
No. he drove past me and then he felt guilty and he's like, well, he looked at me and I'm in my, you know,
kit.
Lycra kit. Yeah. And he's like, he can't hide a machete on that thing. So he goes, I'm going to go help him out. So, you know, he was in a work truck and so he just like moved all his tools and I put my bike in his back and, you know, some guy named Jaeger, a young guy, family guy, we had a great conversation. He drove me all the way home to my house. He didn't have to. It was lovely. Thank you, Jaeger.
Wouldn't accept any money to
help
him out.
No, I tried to pay him. I'm like, hey, you know, you drove me out there. And he's like, I don't pay for gas. This is a company truck. So, no, I'm not taking any of your money. Let me just take you home. So...
Anyway, fantastic.
It was pretty cool that I got saved. And luckily, you know, as soon as I got in like cell phone range, I'm like texting Jake.
Here's the deal. Yeah.
I'm like texting Jake and Nate Scott, our teammate. Hey, I got a ride. Don't worry. I got picked up. I hitchhiked and I got picked up. So I'm all safe now. So anyway, maybe that was ridiculous. But yeah, that was the biggest story.
Cool. Good.
Matt LeGrand. Welcome back from Hawaii.
I did bike in Hawaii, and it was lovely. We actually, I rented a bike while I was there. Scott Plasma with Ultegra.
Oh, sure.
With Ultegra stuff.
That's the TT bike, right?
Great bike.
No, sorry, not the Plasma. Addict.
Okay.
It was a road bike.
Yep.
I did not rent the TT bike.
Carbon. It was Carbon?
It was Carbon with Ultegra stuff on it. It was great. Little ride. I mean, it was kind of stacked up a little high, but like it was nice.
Yeah.
I'd consider that bike.
Yeah.
But great
have
ride.
Some coming to the
do
lab.
You? Okay, yeah. Good people.
Already if have you're, a few.
If you're interested in my two second review, it's a nice ride.
Yeah.
Hey.
Rode with Evan's wife, and David Goodman, friend of the podcast. He needs to come on the podcast sometime. So we all rode in. I guess that would be West Maui.
From like
and we got
Lahaina
and we Kaanapali got stormed area. On
oh no.
In Lahaina, so we were just on this highway just getting stormed on.
Yeah, but and it's 85 it's 85 degrees,
but if you're behind someone you're just getting slopped on, right? You're getting all because no one has any sort of fenders or anything like that.
No.
Just like lots of slop,
and when it rains
hard.
Yeah,
and I was just thinking like, oh, these guys did a like bike vacation here and all they're doing is like wet highway rides, like this sucks. And we turn around and we drop Evan off because he needed to go do a run because he's a dork. And we go a little, we start going like north and it was rain slowed up, rain stopped. Then it was just gorgeous. And it was just like these like hairpin turns and it was very like scenic. And you're just like, you're on these cliffs looking down at the ocean crashing against the rocks and you're just like on all these little climbs and turns and it's just absolutely gorgeous. So it was kind of like a 2-hour ride. First hour was disgusting. The second hour was absolutely amazing.
The north part of West Maui is fantastic for riding.
It's gorgeous. So we did that. That was a good ride. And I did another ride and this was Waikiki area. So it's just basically on this road that heads south, basically, kind of southeast.
Wailea area.
Sorry, Wailea.
Waikiki's on a different island.
Okay. I know these things. I know Hawaii. Yeah,
clearly.
I'm a Hawaiian expert now because I just got back. But this road basically just dead ends, and you kind of, it's funny, like it gets single file, and you're out, and the road is right on the water. And it's kind of interesting. Like you're like, almost could like stick your foot out and put it in the ocean as you're biking.
Interesting.
It's really neat.
And there's a nude beach down there.
I think there is.
If you didn't know that, there is a nude beach down there on the south part of
As Maui. You keep going south, you kind of, all these little people almost have their own little
coves.
Tide pool area right? It was really pretty. You've probably biked there before.
I think so.
Maybe. It's just because it's neat because it's like single lane and you kind of have to take turns with cars when you get on these little spots that are super narrow. But it was another neat ride. So I got two rides in Hawaii. They were both fantastic in some ways and very different rides, and it was a good experience.
Cool.
And I also swam a ton. Get this. The swimming pools in Hawaii, like, fantastic. You'll have, like, 8-lane, you know, 50-meter pools. You know how much they charge you?
Nothing. I think you told us.
Zero. Nothing.
Free. You just go there with your whole family, and you're like, good times.
Really?
It's great. Jeez. It's a lot of swimming, a little bit of running. I think I only really ran once. So that I could say I ran in Hawaii, which is my 46th state. I'm short like 4.
Oh, wow.
So I got to pick off a couple more.
Now, you said you were going to do some open water swimming. Did you get out and test all the watches? And
I So I got out there. I did some open water swimming. I swam with turtles. It was super cool. But I didn't do the, like, so to test open water swimming, I need to have, like, I kind of have to have, like, the setup, right? Where it's, like, a watch on a buoy behind me, like, for testing, and then another watch on, you know, a wrist, another watch on a different wrist. So it's testing a whole bunch of stuff, and I can say, like, this one's accurate, and these two are slightly off by this percentage. I didn't have, like, my setup. I just did an open water swim. So I would say it's not exactly what I wanted to do, because I want, there was some, like, software that I wanted to test that was, like, this new update addressed open water swimming issue. Didn't actually do that. A little bummed about that, because that means I'm going to have to go visit the lake sometime, which is going to be awfully cold. Like right now, it's like 30 degree
minor
water.
Contrast, yeah.
It's either you have to crack the ice to get in there and swim. So yeah. Not going to work. We'll see.
Ah, awesome.
Anyway, backpedal.
Cool.
Love it. Yep.
Paul, would you like to backpedal for us?
Wow. Well, I'm 57 years old now, guys. So you youngsters, we'll get to the, have to do more cross training. And a lot of my biking these days and is really bike commute. I test e-bikes. I review electric bikes. And so that's how I get a lot of my ride time these days. But in the winter, my wife and I belong to a little rowing club here in Seattle. So we get on the ergs. Nice. On rainy nights after work, and that's how we stay in shape. But yeah, just trying to keep myself fit enough to do the long Cascade rides. And we don't race here at Cascade. All our events are rides. So while we have a lot of racers who join our events, I've had to flip my mindset a bit from not thinking about my where I finish on a ride, but just making sure everybody's having a good time along the way.
Gotcha. Yeah, quick question. Does the Cascade Bicycle Club do anything with Washington State Bicycle Racing Association? Do you guys ever partner up on anything?
We haven't. We kind of maintain that distinction between, you know, holding rides versus races. So
there's definitely a place for that. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, but it's still a good thing to, I mean, you guys definitely are looking to accomplish different things, but it's good to work together from time to time. I mean, you guys are going to be catering to a common denominator, and that's people who like to ride bikes.
Yeah,
absolutely. We've got a board member who is formerly very active in USA Cycling. And so there's a lot of crossover for sure in terms of our members who might race and some of our board members as well. So it's a good idea. Send me your contacts at Washington State Cycling Bike Racing. I forget the name of the organization even. That's how unrated the
WSBA. Yep.
It's all good.
Yep.
Quick question. You said you review e-bikes. Is there some place we can learn more about that?
Yeah. So I will do quick snippets about different electric bikes on the Cascade blog and our social media.
Okay.
There's a website called Cycle Volta, which I was their primary kind of transportation and commuter bike reviewer. And so a lot of, mostly bikes made with fenders for car replacing trips. So a lot of cargo bikes. And there's a company out of Portland, actually, which I'm a big fan of, just over the road from you guys, called V-Volt. Basically, it's the Showers Pass founder. Showers Pass, obviously known as one of the great apparel, bike apparel makers, rain jackets, et cetera. They, a couple of years ago, started a company called V-Volt, capital V, small V, Volt. And they're really focused on commuter bikes, really high quality, all with belt drives and mid-drive motors. I did last year get to review a Specialized Turbo Creo SL. Which is one of these incredibly powerful electric road bikes. And so it was a little bit out of type for my typical commuter bike review. But as I wrote in the review, never been 0 to 30 faster on a bicycle than on that thing.
Yeah.
And people always, you know, there's a certain segment of folks who still have the mindset that e-bikes are cheating. And, you know, which we've kind of tried to really dismiss. But I will say this, when I like to go 25, even when I'm commuting, the speed limit on the in Seattle is 25 miles per hour on most roads. And so I like to go the speed limit. Most e-bikes only give you assist up to 20 miles per hour. And once you get past that, if you want to push to 21, 22, 23, 25, then you're just pushing a big, heavy bike.
Yes.
And so it's almost like split workouts here on the streets of Seattle for me, trying to not slow cars down, but take my rightful place in the lane.
Yeah. I found that a lot of the purists who, you know, don't like the e-bike concept or kind of put their nose up to it, I see them getting older, and then they start to lose a little bit of that pop that they had, or they just can't go quite as far. And then all of a sudden they get their leg over that e-bike for the first time. And like me and like Lance and probably like Matt as well, the first time you get your bike leg over an e-bike and you start riding it, you get that aha moment, but you also just start giggling because it's so much fun.
Oh my gosh.
It's a blast. And then they're like, they all of a sudden start to change their mindset a little bit, and they will start to disseminate that to their friends. And I think that the whole concept of people putting their nose up to e-bikes is really starting to change. And my gosh, do we get a lot of people inquiring about them?
Yes, at the lab.
Pretty good thing.
The types of e-bikes are as wide, you know, there's almost an infinite number of styles. I mean, electric cargo bikes I test, and my wife and I own an electric cargo bike made by Tern, and it's got a long tail and it's got massive saddlebag. So you could do a Costco run on that thing. And frankly, we do all our grocery shopping and try to do all our errands by bike and only use the car if we're leaving town. And you know, then you've got electric mountain bikes, you've got electric road bikes,
sure.
You've just got these, what I consider kind of car replacing e-bikes, which I'm a big fan of, bikes for getting to work or for running your errands when in the past you might've used a motor vehicle. An e-bike is a great substitute there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to know.
And it's neat to see some of the technology that's coming out, like the BMC's new Road Machine Amp bike, which is their you know, e-bike for their road machine. It does not look like a road bike at all.
It's roughly twice the weight, right? And it's are you sure?
You mean
check.
It doesn't look like an e-bike? It looks like a road bike.
It looks like a road bike.
It looks like a road bike.
It's like 25, 26, 27 pounds.
What? Oh, that's super light. I was thinking more like 30,
40. Well, even their Alpine Challenge that they've had out for a little while now was like a 32-pound bike or 33-pound bike. And
it's crazy.
You had a big, giant battery on it, and you could tell that it had the bottom. These new ones, they look like a road bike, and they've hidden everything internally. They're they go 28 miles an hour. At least that's what the spec is. I haven't seen one in person. I've seen the pictures. You look at them, and you're like, huh. That does not look like an e-bike. So that kind of removes that stigma for the person that may want to show up to a road bike ride and be on an e-bike. And granted, they're going to crush everybody, so they might have to dial it back a little bit. But that's your bike right there. Oops.
Yeah, they're a little more expensive.
Yeah, they're not cheap. They don't hand those things out.
Well, I like this idea of you know, having something like this in our house where it's like, oh, my wife and I go ride whatever, and she can ride 90% of the stuff, no problem. And if she wants to, she can kick it in on a hill and add a little support.
Yeah.
I mean, perfect.
We tested some of these e-bikes 3 years ago or something like that, Lance and myself. We took Lance's wife, Brandy, out there, and she dropped Lance on all the climbs. Yeah, so, I mean, no, not only were they able to ride together, she had to wait for him at the tops of the hill. So that's a great thing. I mean, yeah, Brandy rides a lot, but it's two people on just regular bikes, I mean, Lance is going to, you know, obviously leave her behind a little bit. Sorry, Brandy. But if you put her on an equalizer bike, like an e-bike, that's just going to change everything. So I think it's good. It keeps people riding together. Keeps people riding longer, too. And that's another thing that we see is so many people that would normally just like, all right, my riding days are over. It's going to retire to the couch and go to pasture here. They're still out riding, and they're still getting exercise, which is fantastic. So,
yeah, you nailed it right there, Jake. I mean, we have a lot of our older riders who are taking e-bikes on our longer rides, even riding STP 100 miles a day. And if you're going to ride 100 miles on an electric bike, obviously it's all about battery management.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You can't just be in turbo mode and expect to go 100 miles, right? So you're sometimes pedaling with no boost and just saving it either for the finishing or just on the hills.
Yeah.
And so there's really no cheating in terms of the exercise you get, because I find that I stay strong riding e-bikes. I mean, this Specialized Turbo Creo SL I mentioned weighed 26 pounds. You mentioned, I think it was a Bianchi. Doesn't look like an e-bike, And so, yes, a lot of these lightweight, you know, e-road bikes these days, they look like traditional road bikes.
Sure.
And oftentimes they have a smaller, lighter battery, which on a, you know, on a 26-pound bike is totally fine. You get into the bigger, heavier batteries when you're dealing with, you know, bikes made for commuting with, you know, larger tires and heavier frames made for taking the abuse of year-round riding out on the roads.
Yep.
But yeah, for older riders, and my wife and I often ride together, and she will ride the e-bike and I'll ride my bike. And you mentioned a wife crushing you on some of the hills.
Yes.
We all the Walla Tour Light last year, and our executive director, Lee Lambert's wife, was riding an electric bike, and we would just get in a pace line behind her on the hills and try to keep up with her. And so they're a tremendous equalizer, and frankly, they allow more folks to ride together. There's just a little bit of etiquette, obviously, around e-biking. You don't want to be the person that's crushing all your friends on
right,
the hills.
Right.
Like, so I try to, if I'm ever out riding an electric bike or reviewing one, be mindful that I don't want to crush anybody's ego by passing them on a hill, riding a you know, big heavy bike and looking like Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, and just for sake, it's not always the wife that's going to be on the e-bike trying to keep up with the husband.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a teammate. It's the other way around.
Yes,
and
it's
because she is so strong and her husband wants to go ride with her, and that's the equalizer right there. So it's just it's a great paradigm for all situations. So cool. All right, anything else?
That's good for me. This has been really fun seeing you guys.
Well, I
don't know.
A couple more things here. I'll do my back pedal, then we'll jump into one last thing so we can let Paul go here just a few more minutes. Real quick, the last 2 weeks for me, I've been 10 and a half and 11 and a half hours respectively.
Ooh, that's fantastic.
Good. It's good.
How's the hip feel?
Yeah, it's got its moments, but I feel like it's releasing. It's starting to loosen up in there a little bit. I guess, Paul, I have a torn labrum in my right hip that I didn't know was there until I had another injury that kind of compounded that and made it worse. But I'm finally getting it to release and start to relax a little bit. And I'm feeling a little bit more natural on the bike after 6 months of dealing with this, which is fantastic. But 11 and a half hours last week, I'm going to try and match that again this week and see how it responds. And each week I feel like I'm getting a little bit stronger, which is great. So
looking good for training camp.
Yes.
Yeah, he's going to be fine. He did just fine on the team road ride. He dropped me like a
bad habit.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but
I would.
it was a fun couple rides, and Lance and I actually rode together 3 times outside last week.
We did.
Yeah.
Nice. Good job, guys.
Played hooky one day and did the team ride on Saturday, and we rode gravel bikes on Sunday. So it was a lot of fun, and looking forward to doing more of that. And I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, just over 3 weeks until we changed the clocks, which is going to be more light in the afternoon, which is the signal for spring to start like doing its thing and getting nicer weather, even though we had a little bit of snow earlier this week, and there's more in the forecast for this coming weekend, I think. Anyway, I'm looking forward to being able to do more rides outside. That's going to be a lot of fun. Yep. And yeah, so.
Are you tired of telling your friend Jake to shut up here?
Shut up, Jake.
Shut up, Jake.
Shut up, Jake.
Okay, I'll shut up.
Perfect.
Sorry, guys. Where'd you guys come up with that from? All right, one last thing. Let's jump into one last thing, Matt. You always start us off on that and go.
Last week I posted from Hawaii. I just kind of like pre-recorded something. It was about that sweat patch thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a lot of difficulty with it. It was not a smooth review. I didn't give it a positive review, and the people came back and they were like, thanks for the review. It was great. I'm like, really? Was it?
Did you actually watch it?
They probably watched the first 10 minutes watch the first 5 minutes or less or whatever. Because my reviews are typically like 10 minutes long.
Sure.
Whatever. We need honesty for that stuff. So that's good.
It's honest.
Good constructive feedback there.
Yeah. There's some. I mean, I try to be nice because I always think like if something's really rough or whatever, I'm like, okay, some engineer worked until 2 a.m. and whatever it is. And sometimes, like, I mean, I am that engineer sometimes, and it's like sometimes things just aren't great. So they could use some work. They could use some more work before I would put my money down on that particular product. This week, I'm going to post something. I have to crank something out so I can I like to post a video per week. And so kind of on the back burner here, trying to crank something out here at the end of the week, because today, as of the recording, it is Thursday. So I think I'm going to go home, and I really want to work on the Apple Watch Ultra after 100 days because I'm past, I'm past 100 days on this watch, and I've been wearing it on one of my wrists for the majority of the time that I've had it, pretty much every day. And it's been good, and you know, it has positives and negatives, but I'll talk about all of that. So it'll probably be a longer, harder video to produce, and I don't have that much time because I need to kind of get it out by Saturday or Sunday.
Sleep is overrated.
Maybe you could break it up into a multi-part series. Just fake it a little bit. Like, well, come back for part two.
Come back for part two. No, I am going to break some of it up because I want to talk about different watch bands that this watch can have, and so like which one should people get. So I will. I'll do that. And yeah. So be on the lookout for that. Hopefully this weekend if I can get to work.
Cool.
We'll see.
Love it.
Yep. And that was the review, the first review that you did that. You got what? Well, 400,000 views on.
I talked about the announcement basically.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so I didn't have the watch on hand when I actually did that. And so, typically, it is a popular subject. So I tend to revisit popular subjects.
Sure.
In fact, I have like some other things. Like this is the Garmin Enduro. I'll do this one with a 100-day review because I've had it for 100 days and I haven't reviewed it at all. I might just call it a regular review after some period of time.
Long term review. Yeah.
And then the Epix has been 1 year.
Yep.
Coming up, and so I might do some sort of like 1 year review on that because that's been a great watch as well. Mm. And I really think it's kind of directed Garmin. I think they're going to start bringing in more AMOLED displays into their watches. That's my prediction.
Cool.
We'll see.
I like it.
Yep. Cool.
Paul, you got one last thing for us? Me anything.
I am, you know, I'm a commuter bike nerd, and so I'm testing out a little called the Cannondale Compact Neo. It's one of these bikes. It's 20-inch wheels, kind of made for folks who might live in an apartment and don't have space for a big e-bike.
Yeah.
Anyway, started riding that, and I've got another fun product, you know, for my traffic safety. It's a product called the Loud Bicycle Horn. You know, so. As you guys know, out in dinging your little bell doesn't really do much to get the attention of drivers. So I'm really curious. I haven't even taken it out of the box yet. It's on my desk at work. But apparently it's 120 or 140 decibels.
Oh, wow.
So I'll report back to you on how that product works.
I'm definitely curious to hear about that one.
I like that.
I'd like to hear that one like early in the morning, sometime just to freak someone out, like a wake up call. if your wife is mean to you, just be like, burr, burr. Heading out. Just wanted to let you know that I'm heading out on the bike.
Awesome. Lance, one last thing.
One last thing for me. We have our team training camp coming up in roughly 2 weeks. Oh, and I met this morning with one of our teammates. We were trying to finalize routes for the camp and try to tweak them a little bit and make them all long enough or hard enough. It's going to be way too long and way too hard. But I spent some time this morning trying to work on that stuff. Nice. So.
Are you excited?
I am excited.
Excited to go back?
I am excited to get. Tucson was fantastic.
Are you flying back?
No, I'm driving back.
Okay. So you can spend some time there.
I am. And, well, kind of, because I have to leave roughly a week early. Yep. So I'm leaving next week because I'm actually going on another podcast, religious-based podcast about Mormons. That's a whole nother thing. But
that would be interesting. That'd be interesting. I'd be actually interested to hear that one.
It's basically telling my whole story of how I have been, this probably hasn't been out there, but I have been deconstructed as a Mormon. I probably am no longer considered a Mormon, but we'll get, that's what that podcast is about. I'm meeting a guy in Salt Lake.
Deconstructed, is that what they call it?
That's what they call it.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. And it could be a 4 or 5 or a 6 hour podcast.
Oh my Lord.
Broken up in a couple segments. Okay. So I don't know how that will go or when it will come out, but we're recording that next week.
So you're going to take Lance Romance and Champ Bailey and
all those guys.
Lance No Pants, all your personalities are going to show up?
My personality will go with the show. I don't know if those other personalities
Oh, come on. Let me talk to this guy. I'll give him some sound bites.
So yeah, but we can't stay in Tucson very long afterwards because my wife and I are going to Hawaii not long after
and
that
you're
as well.
So you like to go to Kona.
We go to the Big Island.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool. That's it. All right, my one last thing. I talked about this a couple weeks ago, and I've been kind of working on it, and it's going to go into full production now, is we have this one bike that we are going to give away to a kid anywhere here in the United States of America.
Wow.
And there's going to be some videos going out to support that, and just keep your eyes peeled, and when you see it, if you know of somebody that would be a good benefactor of said bike, just kind of not follow the rules, but follow the qualifiers, and we're gonna hand this bike out, and it should be a pretty fun thing. So it'll be a little 24-inch team machine, 24-inch two-stroke mountain bike for kids.
Cool.
So they're sweet bikes. It's what we used to give away for the kids last year at the Bikes for Kids. And part of what we're doing too is going to be creating more awareness for the Bikes for Kids thing that we're going to be doing this spring, which should be a lot of fun. And we're going to do a little bit more fundraising and get a bunch of bikes ordered so we can give away a bunch of bikes to a bunch of kids. Should be fun.
Love it.
Cool. All right. Hey, Paul, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast, man. It was good chatting with you again.
It was great chatting with you. Thanks for listening. And I would check out cascade.org or wabikes.org to stay in touch with what we're up to.
Perfect. Yeah, and we'll make sure to put all that stuff in the show notes so folks can click through to that. We will be back next week with another one of these. And until then, bye for now.